And this is another Clearwater moment.
Biodiesel is a really interesting fuel and really promising in terms of alternative fuel sources. I'm Eric Fife, the engineer on board the sloop Clearwater. We try to do everything as sustainably as possible on board, compost and other sorts of recycle, et cetera. And in terms of our engine, we use a blend of biodiesel fuel in the fuel that the engine uses. We're allowed to use a 20% blend of biodiesel in the fuel that we burn. That's mandated by the Coast Guard. And whenever we refuel the vessel, we blend in that 20% of biodiesel ourselves. Basically, biodiesel can be created out of any fat source. And essentially what you do is you modify the fat so that it matches the, or is more similar to the properties of diesel fuel so that it can be burned in a diesel engine. Several biodiesel companies actually produce fuel from used cooking oil from restaurants. You know, a lot of times alternative fuels are preached where really the costs outweigh the benefits of the fuel. But in terms of biodiesel, the Department of Energy has determined that you end up with about 3 units of energy return on investment. Just basically just a positive net return on your energy investment.
The Clearwater was started to get people involved in restoring the Hudson River. Learn how you can be active too. Go to clearwater.org.
Here in New York City, you're tuned to 99.5 FM WBAI and WBAI.org. On the web, I'm Michael G. Haskins. Good afternoon. Thank you so much for tuning in. Once again, an extraordinary effort from the Wake Up Call crew, Esther Armour, the host of the program, Ife Dancy, and Sharan Louise Harper, for an extraordinary effort bringing us all together on WBAI. It's 12 noon. Coming up next, The Gary Null Show.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. You can watch today's show by going to GaryNull.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Today, my guest in the second segment of our program will be Danny Schachter. Danny is well known. He's called the News Dissector. He's a multi-Emmy award-winning television producer, journalist, filmmaker, and media critic. And he has a renowned reputation for serious in-depth reporting on controversial subjects. He was a producer for ABC's 2020 and also editor of the Media Channel. We're going to be talking about dissecting the media's images and spin that has fed us. The media behind the death of Osama bin Laden, and Obama's secret kill list that I'm going to talk about in depth today. And the New York Times dealt with this, but only from one perspective. I'll explain the other perspective. Also today, why is it that we are not debating, as we should, the Defense Department seeking legal authority to deploy reservists onto American streets? This is from Occupy Corporatism. And from Susanna Posel, we should be talking about that because we have a law called the Posse Comitatus where the U.S. military is forbidden from responding on the streets of America whenever the whim is announced. Also, over the weekend, we found out, based upon a Freedom of Information Act request, that behind all this Occupy Wall Street intimidation, violence against the demonstrators who've been the vast majority very peaceful, is Obama. So just let's get this right. Let's get this straight. Whether you like it or not, whether you can handle it or not, because of your own political ideological bent, the White House is working with Homeland Security to target everyone in the Occupy movement. And they're everything they can do to discredit them. There's a new spin control. In fact, Congress just is re-legitimizing the war propaganda. This is from Free Patriot Press talking about Michael Hastings. Quote, the new law would give sweeping powers to the government to push television, radio, and newspaper and social media onto the public. It removes the protection for Americans, as says a Pentagon official who's concerned about the law. Quote, it removes oversight from the people who want to put out this information. There are no checks and balances. No one knows if the information is accurate, partially accurate, or entirely false. It's not enough that the National Guard paid $26 million each year to sponsor Dale Earnhardt as race car. And that's $136 million over the past 5 years, making the highest paid military contractor that has nothing to do with the military. That's just tiny chump change. Last year, the military spent $667 million. Did you know that? Again, that's all based upon propaganda. So how do we know then when a story appears in the media? Is it a story planted by some department? We won't know. And should we not have a right to know if our government is propagandizing us? Yes, we should. Should we have a right to know that this president, while seeking the votes of young people without whom he will not be reelected, is at the same time targeting as terrorists any of those young people that speak out against corporate America and the corruption in Washington? They should know that. And then you can decide for yourself. It's your freedom of choice. Do you want to engage in the Stockholm Syndrome? Someone who despises you but smiles. So as long as a person smiles, you're willing to accept what, anything? Well, let's just get this straight. The White House right now is in full gear to protect the corporate interest, and they will stop at nothing to do that. The laws are ramming through. I've got a dozen laws right here, including the Defense Department seeking legal authority to deploy reservists so we no longer would be protected. Why are they doing that? Well, why don't you take a look at Canada? Canada had 400,000 students protest. They've been protesting now for over 5 months. Now, what are they protesting? The very same lack of freedom of speech and assembly to redress grievances against their government. The government of Canada doesn't want that. They don't want anyone in the streets. They don't want any placards. They want any protest against their policies. So they're trying to enact a law that would make it against the law to protest. Don't we have the same law in the United States? Yes, we do. Are we protesting? Not at all. Well, how is it the largest demonstration in Canadian history goes on, and America acts like it's a non-event, and yet we're both affected by the same identical law? Here, we don't seem to care if all of our freedoms are taken away. At least the majority of people don't seem to care. Well, someone's doing something right out there. Gary Johnson just hit 9% in a popularity vote. He is the Libertarian Party. Again, look for some of the third-party candidates to bring some issues to our attention that we don't have. Today, I'll be doing a commentary from Professor Paul Atwood, American Empire in the Future. Always we begin with the latest on health and healing. Something constructive, something positive. Let's go right to it. Garlic, I mentioned on yesterday's program, is a very important healing agent. Now, a lot of people don't know how to take it. I suggest that if you have a vegetable juice in the morning, it's the easiest way to get it into your system in its most powerful biologically active form. Just juice, start with one clove. Now, if you put some parsley in there at the same time and some ginger, you almost don't taste the garlic, and there's very little after effects on your breath. But boy, it's doing a job inside. What's it do? Well, how about on the way down the throat, it's killing bacteria and viruses, including strep and staph. Once it's in the stomach, it can help kill Helicobacter E. pylori, the bacteria that causes inflammation and ulcers in the stomach. Then when that garlic and the allicin and the sulfur goes into the intestine, it starts killing more bacteria and parasites. And then it can get into the bloodstream and lower your blood pressure, detoxify your liver, help filter your kidneys. All that from having garlic in the morning in your juice. Now, what is it about garlic that makes it so good? Well, a new article published in Antimicrobial Agents and Chemotherapy says that garlic blocks biofilm formation and hence could benefit cystic fibrosis patients and others. I'll quote this directly from Science Daily. Bacterial biofilms are far more resistant than individual bacteria to the armies of antibiotics we have devised to combat them. Now, a group of scientists in the University of Copenhagen have pinpointed a constituent of garlic that that attacks a key step in the development of biofilms in an effort they hope may offer help, in particular for patients with cystic fibrosis. I'm going to suggest it will not only help cystic fibrosis, but people with all itises, ileitis, colitis, endocarditis, all forms of itises, because these are all inflammatory, and garlic helps turn off inflammation. And also, garlic gets through the biofilm and helps you in your intestine kill off the bad bacteria. That's good. Now, this ties in with this. This is another article, and this is from Digestive Diseases and Science. Also reported, this was done at the General Hospital in Athens and the University of Athens. Here's what it says. Irritable bowel syndrome, which is very common, suffered by millions of Americans, clearly linked to gut bacteria. I'll quote this in Science Daily. It says, an overgrowth of bacteria in the gut has been definitely linked to irritable bowel syndrome in the results of a new Cedars-Sinai study which used cultures from the small intestine. This is the first study to use this gold standard method of connecting bacteria to the cause of disease that affects an estimated 30 million people. Now, in lay language, what does this mean? It means that everything you eat will be at some level affected by either the good bacteria in your body or the bad bacteria. So when you have an apple, some broccoli, some beans or rice, brown rice, you're creating and nourishing good bacteria. When you have probiotics, you are supercharging those good bacteria. You're adding billions of good bacteria. You're doing more with one tablet or teaspoon of probiotics than the amount of food you would consume in a week to create. So if you really want to do yourself some good, you have about 2 weeks every day, twice a day, of probiotics. Ideally, when you wake up in the morning and before you go to bed at night. And that's when you should take your fiber substances and vitamin C and chlorophyll just before retiring, because it works overnight in detoxifying the body. Now, let's say that you have sugar or bread, pasta or candy, a soda or coffee. All that feeds bad bacteria. Now, you really want to put some bad bacteria at high numbers? Eat some meat. And eat some putrid meat, like salami, bologna, ham. That really multiplies the bad bacteria. So on the one hand, now they're saying that irritable bowel is directly related to the quality of the bacteria. So one of the reasons that people do so well when I put them on a detoxifying program, it's simple. I'm detoxifying them of the bad bacteria and building new bacteria. It's something that throughout history, cultures have always understood. So now we have good quality scientific validation for that. Now, this is from Science Daily. This was done at the Oregon State University and published in the Journal of Nutritional Biochemistry. Here's what it says. Curry, a new biological role identified for a compound used in ancient medicine. I'll quote this. Oregon State University scientists just identified a new reason why some curry dishes made with spices humans have used for thousands of years might be good for you. The new research has discovered that curcumin, a compound that I mentioned in the last three programs in each of those, because there's probably 2,000 studies on curcumin, was found that it has the ability to help turn off infections in the body, stimulate the immune system, especially the innate immune system. And it found a particular peptide, what is called CAMP, C-A-M-P. And that antimicrobial peptide, which is part of our immune system, helps fight off viruses and bacteria and fungi. So let's say you have candida because you've had too much sugar or alcohol or you're under stress. Then curcumin could help. Let's say that you have a low-grade infection. Curcumin could help. I would suggest between 800 and 8,000 milligrams of curcumin a day. Now, I'm asked all the time about deodorant. Well, first of all, if you wash properly and if you engage in proper hygiene, you shouldn't need any. And if you detoxify your body, the very first thing that you'll notice, and ask anybody who does a real, authentic detox, their body smells change. The natural odors change. And I think we've all experienced what happens when we're toxic and sweat. You get this very acrid, almost nauseating smell. And we're more susceptible in our groin area, our armpits, the hair, which most people don't realize, you're perspiring a lot, and your feet. A lot of moisture comes out through the feet. If you're wearing healthy, good sandals or earth shoes or cotton socks, your body can breathe, so it wicks off the water, and that's good. But in all that water coming out of your body when you sweat is bacteria. And the smell, the bad odor, comes from the bacteria mixing with other bacteria on our skin. Hence, when you start detoxifying, especially with watermelon and lemon juice, the combination, and I've come up with what I think is a pretty good combination. For every 16 ounces of watermelon juice, have 3 lemons. Now, when I say lemons, that means the whole lemon, skin, seed, everything, because in the skin of that lemon is a very powerful detoxifier that does great for deep cell cleansing and changing body odor, especially if you have a bad odor. And if you do that twice a day for about 2 weeks, wonderful change in how your body reacts, and you don't have all that bad aromas coming out of you. What about all these deodorants people use? Well, understand what a deodorant does. A deodorant takes bad body odor and disguises it, and that doesn't change anything. So that's not a good idea. Now, there's an interesting article on aluminum and the fact that we eat so much of it. We know it's one of the most abundant compounds in the soil, but I don't believe we should be eating it, if at all possible. This is from Sarah Jai from Green Med Info. I'll quote this. Aluminum toxicity, a characteristically man-made problem, is now impossible to avoid and has become a postmodern rite of passage. Our environment has become so polluted with this stuff that even our crop plants are being threatened, with biotechnology firms now scrambling to genetically engineer aluminum tolerance into them as a possible, though still desperate, solution. Not only are we being exposed daily through increasingly polluted water and soil and air, but many of our regulatory agencies consider perfectly safe to intentionally consume or ingest the stuff directly into our bodies. And while there is no known physiological need or positive biological role for aluminum in the human body, the FDA is perfectly content with the population it is charged with protecting to say that there is a quality food-grade aluminum. And technically, here's how you get it. There are 8 forms of aluminum the government considers benign. I do not. I consider them all of them dangerous. Aluminum ammonium sulfate, aluminum calcium silicate, aluminum hydroxide, aluminum oleate, aluminum palmitate, aluminum potassium sulfate, aluminum sodium sulfate, and aluminum sulfate. Now, just go to any toxicological data on the material data safety sheet provided for aluminum sulfate, and here's what it says. Mind you, aluminum sulfate is one of the ones that the FDA said is GRAS, generally recognized as safe, and you can ingest it. I say it's not. Quote, this is from the material data safety sheet for aluminum sulfate. Quote, warning, harmful if swallowed or inhaled, causes irritation of skin, eyes, and respiratory tract. Quote, if this material hydrolyzes in water to form sulfuric acid, which is responsible for the irritating effects given below, inhalation causes irritation to the respiratory tract. Symptoms may include coughing, shortness of breath. Ingestion causes irritation to the gastrointestinal tract. Symptoms may include nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. Well, hello? Does that sound safe? No. Now, so I would say, don't have any of that. But how are we getting it into our... Now, here's the good news. First, get yourself a quality air filter that can filter it out. There are such air filters. And according to the journal Ecotoxicology and Environment Safety, at least 500 tons of aluminum-coated chaff is released annually during military training operations in the United States. Deodorants, that's a big one. Aluminum, like a number of heavy metals, is a metalloestrogen capable of contributing to the proliferation of hormone-sensitive cells, like breast cells. And the regular application of this aluminum underarm is like contributing to aluminum-associated disease processes, including breast cancer. So women, if you want to protect your breast, don't use aluminum antiperspirants. Aluminum cans. Beverages in aluminum cans have been shown to have between 1 to 74 parts per million of aluminum, especially in cola products which contain orthophosphoric acid, and that leaches out. Also, infant formulas. According to one recent study, quote, there is still too much aluminum in infant formulas, and that's according to the British Medical Journal for Pediatrics. And finally, vaccines. We thought that thimerosal, mercury, was bad. It is. But how about aluminum? It's almost in all these. And so that means that the more vaccines you get, the more aluminum accumulates. In fact, our children now receive over 60 vaccines before they're 6 years of age. Most of these now contain aluminum hydroxide, and that's bad. And our food, aluminized baking powder, is used in a wide range of baked goods, and aluminum is added to highly processed cheese products to improve its melting qualities. A single serving of a frozen cheese pizza has 14 milligrams. I can't believe it. 14 milligrams. That is a huge amount of aluminum. That's according to the journal Food Additives and Contaminants. That's just one medium-sized frozen cheese pizza. So what can we do about it? All right, let's go to the good news. This is the takeaway message for this segment of our program. Turmeric. You just heard me mention curcumin, the active ingredient in turmeric. Well, it's the polyphenol curcumin that's been shown to reduce neurotoxicity of aluminum. So there's where you want to take your curcumin. Behind that is bee propolis. As a beekeeper, as a certified organic farmer my entire adult life, and a person who I currently have 40 beehives, the bee propolis is what is used to cleanse and sanitize the hive by the bees, but historically it's one of nature's most perfect medicines. In fact, during the revolutionary times, beekeepers would take someone who had an infection that would otherwise become septic, and they would pack that with, first they would wash it out with salt water, and then they would put in their bee propolis mixed with honey, and they would pack the wound. And frequently that would cause it to heal, because honey is the only food in the world that never goes bad. There's no other. And bee propolis is one of nature's most powerful natural antibiotics. So use bee propolis. Then N-acetylcysteine, NAC. It increases the production of glutathione, which is an endogenously produced antioxidant. It's essential for cellular health, and it reduces aluminum-induced cognitive dysfunction and injury to the heart. Ginger also is known to protect against aluminum chloride-induced reproductive damage. Vitamin E, which is important to reduce aluminum-induced liver damage, and vitamin C is crucial for reducing aluminum-induced damage to the reproductive system, as well as oxidative stress reduction in the body. So those are the best ways of protecting yourself from something so common that every time you use your deodorant to cover up your stinky body smells, instead of actually detoxifying your body. Isn't it amazing? If most people ever had an opportunity to open up their body, look inside their intestine, they'd gag. First they'd throw up, projectile vomit, faint, froth at the mouth, and say, how in the world could a body that's clean and scrubbed on the outside be so rank on the inside? It's called putrefaction. And that leads to autotoxicity. However, on the other side of that, if you were to look into a cow, a horse, an elephant, a gorilla, a giraffe, and a vegan's intestine, you'd see a completely different biological process. You would not see putrefaction. You would see biodegradation. You would see fermentation. You would see a normal breakdown, a normal in effect, a normal composting of that material going through the system where the nutrients are being brought out, the fibers cleansing as it goes through. Totally different process. Yeah, we don't want to look there. It kind of makes us squeamish and embarrasses us. Well, let's get over that. Let's live a longer and healthier life. I'm Gary Anall, our guest in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. I'm Gary Anall. Always trying to share information every single program, 15 hours of live programming a week. And by the way, this tomorrow morning, I do my six-hour program on our sister station, KPFK, 29 years and 3 months and counting out there in Los Angeles. So for those of you listening from Los Angeles, from midnight to 6, and those listening on the East Coast, it's 3 a.m. to 9 a.m. Lots of good information. Always giving people something to think about that they might not have otherwise known so they can implement it if they choose. Now, in a moment, we're going to be speaking with Danny Schechter. I've already given you his background, and his most recent book is Blogathon, Reflections and Revelations from the News Dissector. And that's a collection of essays deconstructing the media's popular image of America that is fed to us. Danny also hosts a program, The News Dissector, that airs every Friday afternoon, 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. We're going to go to Danny in a moment, but I'm going to play in a second a radio clip that I'm going to ask Danny to respond to. Today, when I read the New York Times, I saw a large story, about 3 pages long, about the president now has the unique and exclusive right to determine who should be put on a kill list. And is there any discussion on it? Is there any debate? Is there any due process? No. So that means that with over 800,000 individuals working in the military-industrial security complex, that we will never know who decided to kill someone. Will these people have any opportunity to present their case? No. Can they defend themselves? Not at all. What happens if they kill the wrong person? So what? They kill the wrong people all the time. What's the big deal? We've killed hundreds of thousands of wrong people in Iraq and Afghanistan. We just killed NATO, which is us, just killed 8 civilians in one house the other day. Who cares? Nobody cares. Well, except if you're one of the persons killed or their family, but the American media doesn't seem to care. And to the contrary, the moment you challenge them, you end up having to do a walk back. As when someone yesterday, Chris Hayes on MSNBC, just questioned the idea of proclaiming that every American who dies in battle is a hero. And he simply, if you read the whole text, which I did, he asked a larger question. How do we know that all of the people who die are heroes? And what if they're dying in wars where we shouldn't be? But that was enough to get him to walk it back. That's unfortunate, because I don't believe he should have walked it back. I believe that not only should he not have walked it back, I believe that we should hold accountable Geraldo Rivera and Bill Riley and Sean Hannity and all the other people who proclaim that everything we do is based upon the remarkable right of having God on our side and right on our side. And how dare you? If you disagree with us, then you're supporting the enemy. That's Bill O'Reilly's fun thing to say. So we lose even the ability to have progressives debate. And so when I saw this, I thought, my goodness, the New York Times missed the important points at all. They're not questioning how many innocents have died in Vietnam, in Grenada, in Panama, 8,000 in Panama, in Afghanistan, in the first Iraq conflict, the children, because of our intentional hitting of power lines and power plants that would knock out the water purification system, where our own Department of Defense showed that we would kill children because they wouldn't have clean water. And then the parents would get angry and revolt against Saddam Hussein. Well, it didn't happen, but 500,000 children died because of it. Anyone held accountable? No. The news media covered? Not at all. Was it important? Well, there weren't art kids, so why should we care about those kids over there? I'm going to play something from George Carlin a little later on about the kids over there. So that's the backup to this story, and that's why we're inviting Danny on. But before we're there, just a quick mention. We have been asking people who are coming to the sold-out, 1,000-seat sold-out premiere of my new hard-hitting film where I take on the government. I take on the federal government. I take on the White House. I take on a major agency in a way that you've never seen any documentary in American history take them on. We've had 16 people who now, as over the weekend, are not able to come and called and give up their seats. So if you'd like to join me for what will be a historic documentary, where we're asking the whole world that night to join us, because it'll be shown on the internet all over the world, a major campaign. We'll show you how to tune in if you go to the network and watch it. But if you want to be there in person, you'll call 212-877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. That's it. We got room for 17 out of 1,000. Thank you for giving up your seats so these other people can join me. June the 15th, 7 p.m., and a panel, outstanding panel, will follow the screening of the film. 877-627-5065. Now Ron Paul, and from there, Danny Schechter.
Hello, this is Ron Paul with your weekly update for October 10th. According to the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, Americans are never to be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. The Constitution is not some aspirational statement of values allowing exceptions when convenient, but rather it is the law of the land. It is the basis of our republic and our principled bulwark against tyranny. Last week's assassination of two American citizens, Anwar al-Awlaki and Samir Khan, is an outrage and a criminal act carried out by the president and his administration. If the law protecting us against government-sanctioned assassination can be voided when there is a really bad American, is there any meaning left to the rule of law in the United States? If, as we learned last week, a secret government committee not subject to congressional oversight or judicial review can now target certain Americans for assassination, under what moral authority do we presume to lecture the rest of the world about protecting human rights? Didn't we just bomb Libya into oblivion under the auspices of protecting the civilians from being targeted by their government? Timothy McVeigh was certainly a threat, as were Nidal Hassan and Jared Lee Lochner. They killed people in front of many witnesses. They took up arms against their government in a literal way, yet were still afforded trials. These constitutional protections are in place because our founders realized it is a very serious matter to deprive any individual of life or liberty. Our outrage against even the obviously guilty is not worth the sacrifice of the rule of law. Al-Awlaki has been outspoken against the United States, and we are told he encouraged violence against Americans. We do not know that he actually committed any acts of violence. Ironically, he was once invited to the Pentagon as part of an outreach to moderate Muslims after 9/11. As the U.S. attacks against Muslims in the Middle East and Central Asia expanded, it is said that he became more fervent and radical in his opposition to U.S. foreign policy. Many cheer this killing because they believe that in a time of war, due process is not necessary, not even for citizens, and especially not for those overseas. However, there has been no formal declaration of war, and certainly not one against Yemen. The post 9/11 authorization for force would not have covered these two Americans because no one is claiming that they had any connection to that attack. Al Awlaki was on a kill list compiled by a secret panel within the President Obama's National Security Council and Justice Department. How many more American citizens are on that list? They won't tell us. What are the criteria? They won't tell us. Where is the evidence? They won't tell us. Al Awlaki's father tried desperately to get the administration to at least allow his son to have legal representation to challenge the kill order. He was denied. Rather than give him his day in court, the administration, behind closed doors, served as prosecutor, judge, jury, and executioner. The most worrisome aspect of this is that any new powers this administration accrues will serve as precedents for future administrations. Even those who completely trust this administration must understand that if this usurpation of power and denial of due process is allowed to stand, these powers will remain to be expanded on by the next administration and then the next. Will you trust them? History shows that once a population gives up its rights, they are not easily won back. Thanks for calling. This update, a new update, is placed on this number, 888-322-1414.
And that was Ron Paul. Interesting that we have had no progressives asked by the New York Times for a counterpoint of their position, which becomes the officially accepted position, which is nothing more than an apology for Obama. And, for example, Danny Schechter, nice to have you with us.
Hey, how are you? I'm just fascinated by this. I read this this morning, and I got really sick.
Give us your perspective, Danny, in detail. I'll stay quiet. I want to hear what you have to say on it.
Well, just first of all, you know, if you read this New York Times story, way down on the towards the bottom of the story on page one, they say that nothing else in Mr. Obama's first term, assuming a second term, has baffled liberal supporters as much as this, okay, is aggressive counterterrorism. They've been baffled by it, but they're not really quoted as to why they're being baffled. You know, the other day, Amnesty International issued a statement condemning the extrajudicial killing of Osama bin Laden by the Navy SEALs. It's taken them a long time to get that statement out. But, you know, even they have to realize that the U.S. government cannot arrogate to itself the right to initiate extrajudicial killings without any review, any judicial review. And now, according to the New York Times, it's all coming down to one man, President Obama, who says yes, yay or nay to who's going to be on the kill list this week. I think this is shocking, a shocking abrogation of authority. To that degree, I think Ron Paul does a service by raising this, where so many Democrats are totally silent about it, even though privately, many will acknowledge concerns about this. They're baffled by it, whatever, as the New York Times put it. But that's not good enough. This has to be challenged. In my book, this new book that I've come out with called Blogathon, I have two new books out, Gary, from Cosimo Books. One is called Occupy, Dissecting Occupy Wall Street, and Blogathon, which is really a collection of blogs and writing that I've done for Al Jazeera, for a progressive radio network, for many outlets, offering a perspective, a news dissection, if you will, of what's going on. And in my book, I have a chapter called Nailing Bin Laden. Was it a military or a media operation? Why now? And I write in this, I'd just like to read this if I could, speaking of the U.S. government, they needed a heroic narrative to revive support for a war they have been losing and a scalp to sell to a conflict-weary and disillusioned population. It's no surprise that the SEALs labeled Osama bin Laden Geronimo, reviving memories of fighting guerrilla-style Indian wars. Muslim renegades are apparently our new savages. The Native Americans took their enemies' heads and hair. Donald Trump, beware. We shoot out their eyes and waterboard their brains. You know, this whole war on terror has become a war of error in regard to our Constitution, in regard to common sense. But they're pursuing it because they're totally frustrated by the military's inability to, you know, conquer the Afghans, something which no empire in history has been able to do. But nevertheless, you know, arrogant as we are, we decided to try. And so as this war goes down, our rhetoric and our passion to kill more people seems to be going up.
Danny, I'd like to go through several issues with quick responses from you, all right?
Please.
Okay. I'm concerned not about Osama bin Laden being captured or killed. I was glad he was captured, but I would have preferred to see him brought back and properly interrogated by the FBI, not the CIA, to find out which other Saudis were giving financial support to him and al-Qaeda, to find out was he working with anyone within the United States, and if so, whom. And some of the inconsistencies that we have found, the 9/11 scholars have found, especially a Saudi family that was living down in Florida and left just right before the 9/11 Twin Towers, he would have been able to fill in a lot of those empty spaces. And I believe that alive and interrogated, he would have been probably one of the most important intelligence finds in history.
But as long as he's dead, he can't talk back. He can't challenge the American government narrative on all of this. He can't offer another point of view. And that seems to be what this is about. Control the narrative. Control what the American people know and what they have access to knowing. And get rid of, neutralize, marginalize, demonize anybody with another perspective. And that's the problem we're facing here. This is a media war that we're in as well as a military conflict.
All right. Because in that context, many of us believe that both the Pakistani intelligence services knew and was aware of 9/11, and the Saudis also were supporting it. He could have filled both of those in. And now what would have looked like today if one of our primary military purchasers, $20 billion this past year of military equipment, and one of the largest arms purchasers in American history, the Saudis, if we were to find out, and the American people were to find out, that they were in some way aware of or complicit in funding the people behind 9/11. That would have not gone down with the American public. So I believe that knowing full well that they could have easily taken him captive, they decided to stop that information from getting out. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree about that, Gary. I mean, again, silence, you know, the whole idea, you know, under the old Stalinist days, they used to have a term called liquidation. You know, you liquidate somebody. You render them, not only do you murder them, but then you remove them from history. You don't show their face in a newspaper. You don't report anything they ever said. You neutralize them as a human being and as a person with any ideas. Bin Laden, I don't support Bin Laden, but why do I have to say that? Why do I have to go through this mea culpa? So that, you know, oh, I'm a good American like you and me. No, I think it's because we are not allowed other narratives. We're not allowed to access to information to even ask questions of the kind that you're asking. That's what's scary.
Two other quick points, Danny. First, this is from Suzanne Posel from Occupy Corporatism. It says, Defense Department seeks legal authority to deploy reservists onto American streets and to eliminate the Posse Comitatus Act, Section 1385. And the purpose for this is that they're fearing that American students will go the way of Greece or Spain or now Canada, the French Canadians, at least in Montreal and Quebec, and start protesting. So they are going to stop this. They already have implemented procedures through the White House, and that's something new, where the White House, working with Homeland Security, is now orchestrating and directing the attack against the Occupy movement. And shouldn't the Occupy movement be aware now who's against them, this White House, this president, and that the fact that they want legal authority and all this is being done outside of the mainstream media? Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, understand something. You know, we're not just talking about students. We're talking about student debt that has condemned a whole generation to essentially serfdom, not being able to find jobs to pay back this debt burden that's really strangling them for a whole generation. So people are fighting, not just with some objective sense of unfairness in mind, but with very concrete grievances. And this situation is something that terrifies the administration because they know that the student debt crisis is worse than the subprime housing bubble that brought down the economy.
Okay. Finally today, this is from the Free Patriot Press, and it says Congress to re-legalize war propaganda. And then it talks about how I didn't know that they had given Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s number 88 race car $26.5 million per year to sponsor it, $136 million they've given over the last 5 years. They're spending $667 million per year in advertising, and that means propagandizing, but they don't have to put any of this in there. They can have writers that they hire plant stories. They can plant disinformation, misinformation, spin, and we will not know it. All completely legal to lie and manipulate the American public. What do you think of that?
It's a weapon of mass deception. You know, I did a film, WMD, Weapons of Mass Deception, about the selling, you know, of the war on Iraq. And, you know, what we found was that it's not just the government that's doing it, but they have very willing partners, complicit partners, and big media companies that really do the heavy lifting for them. So, yes, the government is spending a lot of money on this black, so-called black propaganda and other propaganda. And the media is basically doing the same by refusing not only to report the truth, but to deny access to people like you, Gary, or others who have a legitimate, you know, set of questions and a criticisms to raise who never get on primetime American television. And that doesn't just happen by accident. It's deliberate. I say this as somebody who spent 8 years at ABC News and before that at CNN. So I'm not just talking about the media in an abstract way, but I've actually had very concrete experiences that were the basis of my first book, The More You Watch, The Less You Know. So, yeah, Gary, this is our battle. It's a fight for ideas. It's a fight for the right to know. And that's something where Progressive Radio Network plays a big role in challenging this narrative. And I think that what you've been doing for over all these years has built an audience and who are open to, interested in, and willing to take action on the issues you raise.
Danny, thank you very much. Danny, good luck on your book, Blogathon. We look forward to seeing you in the studio. I'm back now, and all the best to you in this effort. And it's thenewsdissector.org. By the way, just to give you an idea, Danny is a multi-award-winning Emmy producer. He also holds advanced degrees from Cornell University, London School of Economics, Harvard University, where he's a fellow, and professor at Columbia University School of Journalism. And we're happy to have him on board every Friday following my show. Now, your turn. Give us the opportunity to hear your perspectives on this. A country controlled more and more by a mass media that has corporatized the message, that has commodified the product, and that is really holding a tight leash on its journalists, whether on the left or the right, that, you know, they dare not speak the truth or they have to walk it back because they know that the sponsors call the tune. Not here, but there, yes, on left and right. And I'd like your thoughts. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And we'll come back in a moment to those. Now a commentary from Tom Englehart. This is called America as a Shining Drone Upon a Hill, from TomDispatch.com. I'll quote. Here's the essence of it. You can trust America's cream de la cream, the most elevated, responsible people, no matter what weapons, what powers you put in their hands. No need to constantly look over their shoulders. Placed in the hands of evildoers, those weapons and powers could create a living nightmare. Controlled by the best of the people, they lead to measured, thoughtful, precise decisions in which bad things are, with rare and understandable exceptions, done only to truly terrible types. In the process, you simply couldn't be better protected. That's the message, isn't it? And in case you were wondering, there is no question who among us are the best, most lawful, most moral, most ethical, most considerate, most judicious people, the officials of our national security state. Trust them implicitly. They will never give you a bum steer. You may be paying a fortune to maintain their world, the 30,000 people hired to listen in on conversations and communications in this country every day, the 230,000 employees of the Department of Homeland Security, the 854,000 people with top secret clearances, the 4.2 million people with security clearances of one sort or another, the $2 billion, 1 million square foot data center that the National Security Agency is constructing in Utah, the gigantic $1.8 billion headquarters the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency recently built for its 16,000 employees in the Washington area. But there's good reason. That's what's needed to make truly elevated, surgically precise decisions about life and death in the service of protecting American interest on this dangerous globe of ours. And in case you're wondering just how we know all this, we have it on the best of authority, the people who are doing it. The only ones, given the obvious need for secrecy, capable of judging just how moral, elevated, and remarkable their own work is. They deserve our congratulations. But if we're too distracted to give it to them, they are quite capable of high-fiving themselves. We're talking in particular about the use of the Obama administration and the Bush administration before it of a growing armada of remotely piloted planes, drones, grimly labeled predators and reapers, to fight a nameless, almost planet-wide war, formerly known as the Global War on Terror. Its purpose, to destroy Al-Qaeda and wherever and all of its wannabes and lookalikes, the Taliban, and anyone affiliated or associated with any of the above, or just about anyone else who believes might imminently endanger our interest. What interest? All interest. In the service of this war, in the midst of the perpetual state of war and of wartime, every act committed by these leaders is in turns absolutely, totally, and completely legal. We have their say-so for that, and they have the documents to prove it, largely because the best and most elevated legal minds among them have produced that documentation in secret. Of course, they dare not show it to the rest of us, lest lives be endangered. By their own account, they have, in fact, been covertly exceptional, moral, and legal for more than a decade, minus, of course, the most black site and torture chambers. So covertly exceptional, in fact, that they haven't quite gotten the credit they deserve. Now they would like to make the latest version of their exceptional mission to the world known to the rest of it. It is finally in our interest, it seems, to be a good deal better informed about America's covert wars in a year in which the widely announced covert killing of Osama bin Laden in Pakistan is a major selling point in the president's reelection campaign. No one should be surprised. There was always an overt lurking in the covert of what now passes for covert war. The CIA's global drone assassination campaign has long been a bragging point in Washington, even if it couldn't officially be discussed directly before, say, Congress or the American people. The covertness of our drone wars in Pakistan, tribal borderlands, Somalia, Yemen, and elsewhere really turns out to have less to do with secrecy. Just about every covert drone strike is reported, sooner or later in the media, than assuring two administrations they could pursue their drone wars without accountability to anyone. Recently, top administration officials seem to be fanning out to offer rare peeks into what's truly on target and exceptional about America's drone wars. In many ways, these days, American exceptionalism is about as unexceptional as apple pie. It has, for one thing, become the everyday language of the presidential campaign trail. And that shouldn't surprise us either. After all, great powers and their leaders tend to think well of themselves. The French had their mission statements. The Chinese had their mandate of heaven. And like all imperial powers, they inevitably thought that they were doing the best for themselves and others, sadly benighted in this best of all possible worlds. Sometimes, though, the American version of this does seem, I hate to use the word, but exceptional. If you want to get a taste of just what this means, consider an Exit One, a recent speech of President's counterterrorism czar, John Brennan, at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. According to his own account, he was dispatched to the center by President Obama to provide greater openness when it comes to the administration's secret drone wars, to respond to critics of the drones and their legality, and undoubtedly to put a smiling face on drone operations generally. Ever since the Puritan minister John Winthrop first used the phrase in a sermon on shipboard on the way to North America, a city on a hill has caught something of at least one American-style dream, a sense that this country's fate was to be a blessed paradigm for the rest of the world, an exception to every norm. In the last century, it became a shining hill, a shining city upon a hill, and was regularly cited in presidential addresses. Whatever that city, that dream, was once imagined to be, it has undergone a largely unnoticed metamorphosis in the 21st century. It has become, even in our dreams, an up-armored garrison encampment, just as Washington itself has become a heavily fortified bureaucratic heartland of a war state. So when Brennan spoke, what he offered was a new version of American exceptionalism, the first shining drone upon a hill speech, which also qualifies as an instant classic of self-congratulation. Never, according to him, has a country with such an advanced weaponry system as the drone used it quite so judiciously, quite so peacefully. Yeah, you think? Well, and it goes on from there. Your thoughts? We'll take some calls. Let's say hello to Megan from New Jersey. Megan, your turn.
Yes, thank you so much, Gary. It's wonderful to hear you. We're new to the BAI listening audience, and we've been listening nonstop. We don't have a TV, no cable, no nothing, no internet. So you guys are the number one only information that we get in New Jersey, or at least for our household. A couple things that you had brought up about the media propaganda. My stepfather used to listen to Fox News all the time, and idolized Bill O'Reilly, and I kept saying, you know, I wasn't listening to BAI. I used to watch because I'm like 30. I grew up with The Daily Show and Stephen Colbert, and luckily a lot of the youth was getting certain, you know, information from there, although with a little bit of farce, and realizing what the super PACs were with what Stephen Colbert was doing. But I wanted you to touch base on the Fox News supposed investigation with Bill O'Reilly, Hannity, and I imagine Glenn Beck, who is a weasel himself, about the Fox News losing their SEC license, or what was going on with that, and Rupert Murdoch.
Okay, well, they haven't lost any license yet. And Rupert Murdoch has, in his News Corp, have not been indicted yet or officially investigated yet in the United States. But there's a high probability that based upon what is unfolding in England, in the English courts, that virtually all of Rupert Murdoch's former supporters and puppets in the media, including two former prime ministers, Cameron now and the little lapdog, a fool of a prime minister, pathologically dysfunctional personality that used to say anything to get a positive reaction out of Bill Clinton and George Bush, Tony Blair, now have distanced themselves from Murdoch. Everyone else will start to distance them. And in time, the truth will come out. And after that truth comes out, then the people in the United States will have more courage to go after him. Okay, thank you. Lou Anne Panessi. Lou Anne, how are you? Is Lou Anne there? No. Okay. Then one last one. We have, is it Al here? Who do we have on to finish?
It's Al.
Hi, Al. You're on.
Hi, yes. I actually kind of similarly had the same thing on mine as the last caller. I remember I used to be an avid Glenn Beck follower. I used to see everything about him. And I remember a few years ago, he had a segment where he was going to expose the female concentration camps. And he went on earlier talk shows to promote it. And by the time his show aired, he said that he could no longer present whatever he was going to present. He no longer believes in it. And that happened in the span of like 5 hours. I just want to know, what do you think the threat is behind that, that's stopping them from exposing the truth? Because simply losing a job like his, which inevitably did happen, can't be enough.
No, well, it depends. Depends upon what you value. If you value a need to be in a public arena, if you value a large salary and all the income that comes from that, $56 million a year in his case, then yes, it's enough to engage in self-censorship. And also you have to ask, were his facts correct? Some of Glenn Beck's facts were simply totally 100% wrong. But then again, some were correct. So if someone presented you with information that would end up embarrassing you and the network, and you were forced to say, is this correct? And he found that it wasn't correct, or he had correct information. Do we have FEMA camps? Yes, we do. Some of the information that we've been given is those FEMA camps are strictly for illegal aliens, but we already have more than 45 major camps that have been used nonstop for FEMA by ICE agents to take illegal aliens, either detain them or send them back across the border. So that argument doesn't wash, but we've never had an honest answer, and therefore anything you're left with after honesty is speculation. Okay? So don't know what the truth is, and we won't know until the day comes when all these laws, all these executive orders, curtailing our freedom of speech, and then making any dissent against this government or the major corporations, and it's one and the same now, because it's the corporations that are demanding the laws to protect us from protesting against them or holding them legally responsible for anything that we find that they have done in secret that would adversely affect our lives and or the planet. So they're not working separately. You have to understand the major corporations and the governmental agencies and the state agencies are working as one. It is one hand in one iron fist. That's how it works today. Or a velvet fist. Either way, it's not our hand and it's not our fist. Thank you very much for your call. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.